Welcome to this special July 4th edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. And on today's show, we'll visit with some World War II and Korean veterans who we spent a day with last April at our nation's capital on the 15th Honor Flight Twin Cities. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash.
As we prepare to celebrate this 4th of July, reflect with me for a moment. What does the 4th of July mean to you? Does it mean a day off from work, picnics, patriotic concerts, and fireworks? For many, it's an opportunity to wear red, white, and blue, and to unfurl the American flag. For some Americans, the day is an opportunity for a mini vacation with family and friends. Between the lemonade, barbecues, and summer games, what's lost to many and remembered by few are the origins and significance of this special day, this most patriotic of patriotic holidays. The 4th of July celebrates an important birth date, the birth of our nation and the declaration of the independence of the 13 colonies as a separate but united states. This revolutionary declaration espoused a government for the people, by the people. It stated, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Instrumental in our nation's fight for independence was the Colonial Militia, the predecessors of the Colonial Army and today's National Guard. These citizen soldiers fought a valiant fight, ensuring the formation of an independent state and laying the foundation for the National Guard's role in future conflicts. This 4th of July, while we wear our red, white, and blue, enjoy the company of our family and friends. Observe in awe the flashing of fireworks, or pause with our hand over our heart while the national anthem is played. Let us not forget that freedom is not free. As Franklin Delano Roosevelt once said, it is the truest sense. Freedom cannot be bestowed. It must be achieved. As we celebrate this 4th of July, let's pause for a moment and remember the men and women who are serving this country today, securing that freedom just as our country's forefathers did. Have a happy and safe 4th of July.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the Honorary Command Sergeant Major of Honor Flight Twin Cities, Jerry Kaiser. Jerry, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you very much. It's a great day to be here.
Jerry, last April, we had the honor of attending a day-long event, your 15th Honor Flight Twin Cities, and took along my producer and watched the festivities, took part in the warm-ups, and learned that your wife is the general, and you're the honorary Command Sergeant Major.
That would be true.
Jerry, can you, for our listeners that might not know what Honor Flight Twin Cities is, can you tell them briefly?
Honor Flight Twin Cities is a national organization of which we are a hub out of the Twin Cities. There's 130 hubs around the country, and since 2005, we've taken over 160,000 veterans to Washington, D.C., and 95,000 guardians with those veterans.
And how many have you taken out of the Twin Cities?
1,360 World War II veterans and 1,095 guardians.
That's a lot of people on a lot of flights, and I found out it was a long day, Jerry.
Yes, it is. I'm up 20 hours, and most of the other folks, the veterans need to be up at 4. They need to be at the terminal at 5, and then we leave at 0600. And they're back again at about 10 at night, and there's with the festivities after that, they're home at 11, so it's a long day for them too, but they're really pumped up. Their adrenaline's running high.
Well, Jerry, what we're going to do on today's show is we got about a dozen interviews of veterans that were on that flight. We're going to play through a few of these throughout the show, and after we play a few of them, then you and I'll see if we can't explain what happened.
Yes, sir. They're a great bunch of men and women.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
So, Jerry, we spent a little time at the Minneapolis airport that morning. We got out there early. You got everybody loaded up. There was a little bit of delay when we were taking off, so we talked to Sergeant Ben. And then we finally got in the air, had a nice, smooth flight all the way out to Washington, D.C. Beautiful day, as you said. And then we landed at Washington National, got off the plane, and went down the aisles. And there was quite a group there singing some songs.
Yes, it was a group from Falls Church, Virginia, a bunch of women, ladies, that sang the patriotic songs and all the different Army, Air Force, Marine Corps songs as the veterans came through there. They were absolutely wonderful. There was like 14 of them.
So let's take a listen to some of that singing while we were leaving the plane on the way out of the airport to heading for the luxury buses. At the Women's Memorial at Arlington Cemetery, and we're talking to Jean Brown, who served in World War II. Ma'am, can you tell us where you served?
Well, in Britain, in England, because I'm from England, and they needed women to take the men's places in the forces. So definitely the army, they needed women. So they called girls up who were in their 21st year, and I was one. And I had to leave my job and go and don the uniform, and I was in the army. And then what we're going to do, well, my first choice was to be a driver. I thought here was a good chance to be a driver, but I didn't get that. I got the second one, which was anti-aircraft batteries.
What were you doing with the anti-aircraft batteries?
Well, I was the height and range finder, giving the height and range to the guns, the artillery guns, to fire at height.
And I'll bet you were good at it.
Well, had to be, yeah. I was made a corporal. And then, of course, we were on camps out in the country, and they needed someone to exercise the girls. So I was sent on a physical training course, 6 weeks. And came back and took the girls for the keep fit.
So you were the drill instructor for the ladies?
Yes, yes.
Now, do you live in America now?
I live in America now because all my children are over here, and mostly Americans. Yeah, my grandchildren and daughters too. Three daughters all came to live in America. So here am I now.
So this should be an exciting day here in Washington, D.C.
Terrific. It's terrific. God bless America. Thanks for doing this for such as me. It's wonderful.
Thank you, ma'am. Well, Jerry, that was the beginning of the trip. We left Minneapolis, flew out to Washington, D.C. The first place we stopped at after we got on the buses was over at Arlington Cemetery, the Women's Memorial, and talked to Ms. Brown about World War II. And from there, we're going to head over to the Air Force Memorial for a little lunch and have a kind of a spirited conversation with the World War II veteran over there. And it was a wonderful day, wasn't it?
It was. It was fabulous. And I loved hearing Ms. Brown to talk about that women's memorial. It is a wonderful thing for these gals to see that we had four other women. And they really appreciate that. And the guys do, too, because, hey, these girls took over the spots where a lot of men couldn't do that.
So this July 4th weekend, we're talking about the 15th Honor Flight Twin Cities that we participated in last April. We'll have more of that coming up when we return. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the special July 4th Honor Flight Twin Cities edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been reliving our April flight to the nation's capital with our World War II and Korean veterans and their guardians, along with the Honorary Command Sergeant Major Jerry Kaiser, who has led this flight 15 times so far. And Jerry, we're going to get back into the trip. We just finished visiting the Women's Memorial, and then we headed over to the Air Force Memorial for a little lunch.
Yes, that Air Force Memorial is just above the Pentagon, and it's really a nice place. It's the spires are going up, and it's a place that's just got, it's cool, and we have our box lunches there, and the gentlemen and ladies can kind of spread out and look over the, I can look down on the Pentagon and over into Arlington and the across the river to Washington D.C. So it's a great, it's a beautiful place.
Now let's see who we met over there.
We're on Honor Flight Twin Cities in Washington, D.C., and we're at the Air Force Memorial having some lunch with our veterans and all of their guardians. And we're sitting in the Air Force Memorial overlooking Arlington Cemetery. And I've grabbed a U.S. Marine Corps veteran from World War II, Alan Kaplan. Alan, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your service in World War II?
I spent 2 years in the Marine Corps from 1946 to 1948. Most of the time was done in Hawaii as a postmaster.
Tough duty.
Real tough. Went from the center of Hawaii, which is Waiʻoa, which is a radio station that Washington used to contact Waiʻoa, and Waiʻoa would recontact Japan. This was after the war. I imagine now that it's gone and everything is done by satellite. Being that I had such a nice, clean record, the government decided they were going to send me on an atomic bomb test. So they took my great job of being a postmaster away and sent me to the Marshall Islands, where I watched two atomic bomb tests. After that, I came home, and they said, join the Marine Corps Reserve. There won't be a war. So I joined the Reserve, went to the university, got a minor graduation, which allowed me to re-enlist in the Air Force as an air cadet. But I asked the guy, if I don't fly, where do I go? And he says, you go home. And that's exactly what happened. Couldn't land the airplane. They sent me home. If I had gone about a month or two later, the Korean War started, and they would have made me learn to really fly. But that doesn't make me a hero. Just makes me a veteran.
And are you enjoying your day here in D.C.?
It's my second time in D.C. I used to work for a big TV station in the Twin Cities, and I worked in the news department. And we came to D.C. to do a news story, but I can't remember what the story was. And the only thing that I remember is we got stuck in the basement of the White House. For what reason, I don't understand.
So you're having a pretty good day today, though.
Oh, I love it. I love it. The weather's terrific. I was in the Air Force, not anymore. So I got out of the Marine Corps right at the right time. I got out of the Air Force right at the right time. Sometimes you live a charmed life.
From postmaster in Hawaii to getting out before the Korean War. Pretty good rules.
Yeah. Had I kept that job as the postman in Hawaii, I probably would have spent 20 years in the Marine Corps. I messed up the post office gig by having a very clean record. Because if you didn't have a clean record, they wouldn't let you go on the atomic bomb test.
Well, thanks for sharing that story with us today, Alan.
I appreciate your coming along with us. Thank you.
Jerry, that was a spirited conversation with Al, and in the world, or the Air Force Memorial was a great place to have lunch. Nice, bright, sunny day. And then we loaded back up on those three luxury buses, and we headed over to what was probably the main attraction of the day for most of those World War II veterans, the World War II Memorial.
Yes, it was. But the fun part was getting there, because we had police escort, and we could just kind of zoom through the traffic. And it was a busy day. They said there was like 100,000 people down there, and we just melted through the crowd because we had the police escort. I told them it's just like an El President day. We get to go to where we're going right now.
And we got there, and we got off the buses and got everybody wheeled down to the one part of the World War II Memorial and lined up all the wheelchairs and all the World War II veterans, and you even had a guy there blowing taps.
Yes, we did. We go to the Atlantic side, and we had three of our guardians had brought their loved ones a burial flag, and we had a memorial for that. And then we have my bugler, who actually comes up in Fredericksburg, Virginia, to play for me at and the last five honor flights. He's been there every time, and he also played at the Korea one. So it's a meaningful thing for them to memorialize those men and women who passed away already, or buddies who they lost during the war. And we have them there to remember what they did in those wars, and they can live this their years afterwards in peace because they've honored all these men and women who have passed on, and they appreciate that. So it's a solemn moment. As you know, when you start playing the taps, everything in the place stopped.
Everything did. And for those our listeners that haven't been out to see the World War II Memorial, it's fantastic. It is just beautiful. And for all of those listeners that haven't seen it, you can go to Minnesota Military Radio Facebook site, and there'll be quite a few photos up there, and we'll pin them to the top for this weekend so that you can see what this all looked like and maybe just look through some of those photos while you're listening to the show. Now, Jerry, while we were there, after you did the ceremony and so forth, they had a little free time to roam around, and we had an opportunity to talk to several of the World War II veterans, and you haven't heard these interviews yet, so let's take a listen.
Standing at the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., with the Twin Cities Honor Flight, and we just took pictures of 77 World War II veterans. I have one with me today, Walter Pride. Walter, can you tell us where you served in World War II?
I served in on Guam with the B-29s.
And what years was that, sir?
44, 45.
And can you tell us a little story about that duty?
Well, I had a bailout once. We were coming back to Iwo Jima, and our engine started to burn, and they tried to feather the prop, and they couldn't do it, so they ordered everybody in the back to bail out.
I'll bet you wish that day never came.
And we bailed out. A good friend of mine, Lieutenant Charles Cohn, I told him, I said, I know you can't swim. I said, you go out first, and I'll follow you down. And he said, no, I'm the officer here. He said, you go out first. Poor Charlie, they never picked him up. I mean, the destroyer that picked us up went back and forth until the night, and no way that they found him. He never was found. And I was always sorry that I didn't push him out and follow him down. But,
sir, is this your first visit to the World War II Memorial?
Oh, yeah. First time.
A beautiful day in Washington, D.C. Are you having fun on this trip?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I have my daughter with me, and she's taking good care of me. It's nice to have two daughters.
Yes, sir. Well, we're going to let you enjoy the World War II Memorial, but thanks for talking with us today.
We're right in the middle of the World War II Memorial with Orville Gesslin. Orville, can you tell us where you served in World War II?
I was in the Pacific. I was in the Navy, Navy SEALs, and we served in the Pacific, and we ended up being one of the first troops going into Japan after the 3rd Marine Division went in.
How was that experience going into Japan?
Well, that when they dropped the second bomb, we were glad because we had no trouble going into the island of Kyushu. We had no trouble, and we stayed there, and even the returning soldiers never gave us any trouble.
So the bomb worked?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we spent 9 months stationed right outside of town, or Nagasaki, that is, and we had no trouble.
Did you go into Nagasaki and see the damage after the bomb?
Oh, yeah, 3-4 times, because we were only 30 miles from it.
And how severe was that?
Oh, and some of them steel frame buildings, the frame were bent like a letter E. A lot of them were bent like a letter L from the terrible heat. And, yeah, you couldn't see the end. So that was it. We spent 9 months there, and I was one of the lucky ones also. Some of the boys got cancer.
From the radiation?
From the radiation, but they checked me at the VA a few times when I came home, and so I was one of the lucky ones. Yeah, because I met them out there, liver cancer, colon cancer, and everything. So I was lucky.
Orville, what's your view of this World War II Memorial? It's beautiful, isn't it?
Oh, this is nice. Yeah, I'm going to go and look around now and enjoy it.
Thanks for joining us today, Orville.
This is Pat Michaels.
When I was a little girl, my brother would say, Mary Pat is very fat, so I dropped the Mary.
I'll bet your brother doesn't do that anymore.
He doesn't.
Can you tell us about your service in World War II?
Oh, I'm glad to. I was a sophomore at St. Catherine's College, and our family were very patriotic, and I decided I need to help the war effort. My brother was over in the Pacific, and so I volunteered for the waves. And then I went home and got my mother and dad's permission. And I went on the train to Hunter College in New York, and from there I went to Brooklyn Naval Hospital. And I loved my service there. It was hard to be away from my mom and dad, but it was well worth it because we did win the war.
We did win the war, but you were there when a lot of boys were coming home and they were pretty hurt, weren't they?
They were. Many were without an arm or without a leg. It was hard, you know. But we who were in the hospital could encourage them and help them to know that they were still whole people in spite of the fact that they had lost an arm or a leg.
And I'll bet every one of them was glad to see you.
They were. Well, they seemed to be, you know.
How many do you think came through the hospital? How long were you there?
Oh, I was only there a year and a half, and I have no idea how many came through, but there must have been 1,000 or so.
And all of them hurt pretty badly.
And all of them hurt badly, yes, coming out of Europe.
If there was anything you'd want to tell our listeners or our young people today to remember about World War II, what would it be?
I'd say to really make peace with your family, with your neighbors, because that's what we have to do in this world. We can't afford another war like World War II.
And, Pat, are you enjoying the day? And what do you think of the World War II Memorial?
Oh, I think it's wonderful. It's my first time seeing it, and I'm just overwhelmed with the beauty of it, the fountains and, you know. And the people are so friendly. People keep coming up and asking me about my service and thanking me, you know. And I haven't experienced that before, so it's been an honor.
Well, thank you for joining us today, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the trip.
Thank you so much.
Jerry, there's a few interesting stories from our World War II vets, and Pat was a wave. What's a wave in World War II?
A wave was a Navy administrative person, woman, Woman's Corps. They're enlisted sailors, and they did a great job trying to do all the administrative work. And then there was nurses also, but their wave nurses were another part of it.
The memories were incredible. Pat remembered all of the severely wounded veterans coming home, and the fellow before her was talking about all the damage in Japan and all of his buddies that got cancer, and the guy before him was on there, and he's still feeling sorry about a lieutenant that should have jumped out first so he could have kept an eye on him because he couldn't swim. And the things that you remember from your times in war, some of them aren't so pretty, are they?
No, war is a nasty business, and it's not like the movies where they just get winged in the shoulder, but these men and women saw all sorts of things. It depends on where they were. Only 10% of them, of the 16.5 million of them, were actually in some sort of grievous combat. However, everyone was affected by it, and they all did their part. And they came back home, and most of them just went back to work. And this is their first time to see these memorials or any memorials in 70 years.
Jerry, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I think we've got another interview from the World War II Memorial on our 15th Honor Flight Twin Cities that we took last April. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be back with more interviews. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we'll get back to the April Honor Flight Twin Cities in a moment. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
This week, families, friends, and communities will celebrate the independence of our country and the freedoms we enjoy as we celebrate the 4th of July. The signers of the Declaration of Independence did not take their signatures lightly. Here we are, hundreds of years later, with the same purpose and promise that guides our country. At 4th of July celebrations, I encourage you to take a moment and look back on the courage and wisdom of our founding fathers and be renewed in our shared commitment to those core values that brought our nation to life back then and guide us now. Take a few minutes to remember what the 4th of July is about and to remind ourselves how fortunate we are to be Americans. Happy 4th of July.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As we've said all day, this is a special July 4th Honor Flight Twin Cities edition of Minnesota Military Radio. And our guest in studio is the Honorary Command Sergeant Major of Honor Flight Twin Cities, Jerry Kaiser. And Jerry, we can't let this pass without making reference to the general. And you're married to her.
Yes, sir. She is my beloved wife, Jana, and she is the administrative person that keeps all these things together as far as it's a very fluid situation with these veterans. Unfortunately, we lost over 80 people on the last flight. Not half of them, obviously, are guardians, but that particular generation gets sick, and most of them are be going on the next one, or they can't go anymore because their health has failed.
Now, let's be clear on that. We didn't lose anybody on the flight.
Correct.
But people that had signed up for the flight came off the list because of health or, or unfortunately, probably lost a few of them. And you've told us in the prep meetings that you're a self-appointed command sergeant major, and as a smart husband, you gave your wife a self-appointed generalship.
That's right, 4 stars. And they said, well, you were just a sergeant when you were in Vietnam. And I said, that's right, but I promoted myself because I could. And we have a great time with that. These men and women, we put them back into the military just like it was 70 years ago. And we have a great time with it. It's fun.
And you're always looking for more World War II veterans to sign up and go on the next trip. You got one coming up this fall.
Yes, sir, October 29th. If you're a World War II veteran and you want to go on a flight like this, you go to our website or have one of your relatives go to that website, honorflighttwincities.org. That's honorflighttwincities.org. And then you can make a copy of that or give us a call at 651-481-8835. That's 651-481-8835, and we'll give you the right information and the direction to go.
And it's an amazing day. The World War II veterans were wide awake all day. They were excited. They were looking around. They were having a good time. And you took good care of them. There was breakfast on the plane. There was a box lunch, and there was a nice dinner buffet. And they're escorted by a guardian. It's safe. It's luxury buses. It's a nice airline. It's well done.
Well, thank you. It is. And the fun part this, when we all have a police escort this time, that means that we go everywhere pretty quick. And everybody pays attention to all the sirens. So the veterans and everyone loves that because they don't get to go through traffic like that at Minneapolis-St. Paul, that's for sure.
Jerry, let's get back to the interviews. We were at the World War II Memorial, and I think we've got one more interview that we need to check out from that location.
We're still at the beautiful World War II Memorial on the Honor Flight Twin Cities. And now we're talking with Bill Grazidi. Is that correct, sir?
Grazidi.
All right, second try. I'll get it right. Can you tell us about your service in World War II, sir?
Well, I was on an aircraft carrier called the Omni Bay. And the first time that I was aboard ship was on the USS Trenton. We were in Wake Island, Midway, and a few other spots over there. And then I was transferred in Hawaii to come back for new construction, and I was put on a ship called the Omni Bay, which was a small baby fat carrier. And this ship carried about 35 planes, and they had the pilots for the planes. And we were steaming along in Lingayen Gulf, January 4th, 1945. And all of a sudden, I went to relieve the watch, because I had to relieve the watch. So I had to go to early lunch. I was about ready to go and relieve my man when all of a sudden I was drinking my lemonade and we had a massive explosion. What happened was a Japanese plane, came out of the sky from the sun and crashed into us. He damaged us very severely. All our ship's planes caught on fire. All the ammunition started to blow up. All the torpedoes started to blow up.
So that was a kamikaze.
That was what a kamikaze, yeah. We ended up having to sink the ship because it was, you couldn't put out the fires. We had so much trouble putting out the fires, and we had to abandon ship. I had to jump over the back of the ship, ended up on a raft for about an hour on a raft with two other guys. And one guy took his mouth organ out and started playing Home Sweet Home.
And you got picked up within an hour?
Yeah, about an hour.
That was pretty lucky, wasn't it?
It was.
So then the whole ship went down and you probably lost some crew?
We lost 97 men.
And after that, were you transferred to another ship or were you, what was your war over?
I was put on the New Mexico. And 2 days later, we took another kamikaze on board that ship.
Did that one go down too?
Oh, it had quite a plate of armor, but didn't sink that one.
So we got a beautiful day in Washington, D.C. with nice, bright sunshine. What do you think of the World War II Memorial?
I think it's wonderful. Just wonderful.
Are you having a good day on the honor flight?
Everybody should come and see it.
Are you having a pretty fun day today?
It's wonderful.
So you'd recommend for the other World War II veterans to get on the next honor flight?
They should come the first chance they can.
Thanks for talking to us today, sir.
Jerry, we spent a couple hours there at the World War II Memorial, and all the veterans were looking around and reading the scriptures on the wall and taking in everything they could. And then we finally had to get back on the buses to take a short drive over to the Korean War Memorial, which one of my favorites. They've got all of these soldiers marching up a hill just like they were in battle. And went over there, and you had a little ceremony over there as well.
Yes, we had 17 Korea War veterans, and we had them line up, a couple rows of them, and the same type of ceremony. We had one lady who brought her father's casket flag and took pictures, and then I had the trumpeter do taps again. It was a wonderful project to be able to do that and honor those Korea veterans who the next war that did not get finished. It's still actually on because North Korea and South Korea have not had an armistice, that's for sure.
And once again, we had an opportunity to talk to a Korean veteran, and I think you're going to enjoy the story he tells.
Okay.
We're now at the Korean War Memorial on the Honor Flight Twin Cities, and we're talking to Melvin Mahalik. Did I say
beautiful,
that right?
Just beautiful.
Sir, you're a Korean War veteran?
Yes, I am.
Can you tell us a little bit about where you served and what you did there?
Well, I started out at the 38th parallel. From there, we went north. Tried to drive the Chinese and the North Koreans back.
And how'd that work?
Sometimes good and sometimes bad.
So were you in the battle, the Chosen Battle, Reservoir Battle?
Well, right after that. Yeah. Some friends of mine were in the Chosen Reservoir.
Were you in Army?
Yes, I was.
And how long were you in Korea?
10 months.
Yeah, now a lot. Go ahead.
My enlistment was up, and they had to let me go.
They had to let you go home?
They had to let me go home. They didn't keep it like they do today.
A lot of our listeners weren't born when that war happened. Can you tell them a little bit about the war? That was a brutal war, wasn't it?
It was very brutal and cold in the wintertime. Very cold in the wintertime. We killed a lot of people. A lot of our friends were killed there.
We had some good air support during the day?
Sometimes.
When the weather was good?
Yeah, when the weather was good, when they could see, yeah.
So then you could get resupplied.
Right.
Do you have any favorite or worst memory of that time in Korea?
Yes, I can say one memory I have that I told my nephew about was I was hunting in Korea, not North Koreans or Chinese at that time, but they had a lot of pheasants there. And I was driving my Jeep down the road one day, and here was this pheasant 20 feet away from me. So I pulled out my .45, stopped my Jeep, and I shot 3-4 times, and you know, if you ever shot a .45, it's not very accurate. They're always shooting one way or the other. And so I got up and I stood up and I took my 30 caliber machine gun and I blasted them to kingdom come. But I did get them.
Was there enough left to cook up and eat?
No, there wasn't. The cook always promised me to bring back a pheasant, Mal, and I'll cook it up for you. But
You're the only veteran I ever met that went pheasant hunting in Korea.
Well, I did. Actually, they were hunting me.
Well, thanks for sharing that story with us.
You're welcome.
Are you enjoying the flight today?
Oh, love it, especially this part right here.
Have you seen this Korean War Memorial before?
It's first time. Very emotional for me. We walked through many rice paddies, just like these guys are doing.
Yeah, and if you had a chance, you won't get a chance today, but at night they're lit up and it's just beautiful here.
I'll bet it is very emotional.
Well, thanks for sharing your story with us, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So, Jerry, we had a beautiful day in Washington, D.C. We'd spent quite a bit of time so far at the World War II Memorial and at the Korean Memorial, and we had another stop we wanted to make before we went over to Arlington for the changing of the guards. So we loaded back up on the buses, and we went over to the Iwo Jima Memorial, which is one I hadn't seen before, and that's one that's pretty important to a lot of folks here in Minnesota.
Absolutely. The last flag raiser was Charles Lindbergh from Richfield, Minnesota, and he's since passed away in 2007 after he saw we had the World War II Memorial dedication here in Minnesota. After that, he was at that, and he was pretty proud of being the last flag raiser and being him from that was he was the raiser of the first flag. The memorial is a depiction of the second raising of the flag. They wanted a larger flag up there, and so they just raised another one. And the fellow who took the picture kind of it wasn't an accidental shot. It was a great shot, but that memorial means a lot to the Marine Corps, and I wanted to make sure we got the folks there. We've had every flight goes to that particular Marine Corps memorial, and there's an equally that is a duplicate of the one that's in Texas. That's actually the mold of it. There are two of them in the country.
Jerry, what some people don't realize, we had a Navy guy on about 6 months ago, and he was on his ship out in the harbor, out in the ocean, looking over Iwo Jima. And when that big flag went up, he told us that every ship within eyesight, they were blowing their horns and making all kinds of noise, and you could hear it all over the place. And while we were at that memorial on Honor Flight Twin Cities, your number 15, we got to interview a couple of Navy guys there. Let's listen to that now.
We're on the Honor Flight Twin Cities, and we're at the Iwo Jima Memorial, and I've run into a couple of Navy men that were on the same ship and perhaps didn't even realize it. One is Roger Carr, and the other one's Peter Pappas. Gentlemen, nice to see you.
Good to be here. Good to be seen.
Yes, good to be here. Yes, I am.
Now, what ship were you on?
USS Menard to 201.
And where were you assigned in World War II?
I was assigned on the island of Guam. I was in the Seabees, but after the war ended, they transferred me to a ship because they needed a cook. And there is where I ended up. I ended up being a cook in the Navy.
Roger, was Peter cooking for you?
Well, I didn't know he was, but I guess he was. Because everybody, when the war ended, everybody went home, except the chief petty officers and the guys that were signed up for so many years. So they just had trouble getting anybody, you know, and everybody. But I don't know if he was. You didn't go to Nagasaki, did you?
No, I didn't.
No.
So we found out a CB knew how to cook.
We knew how to cook. When I got on that ship in Seattle, it had just got back from Okinawa, the invasion of Okinawa. And I'm not going to tell you the story about the barber. But anyway, we left Seattle, and all the old salts on it were saying, what's going on? We got nobody on the ship. No troops. It's a troop carrier. We got no troops. So we went out to some island, I forget now, and loaded up a bunch of Marines that had been island hopping. And they were tough guys. When you walked along the deck, you moved over a little when they were coming. So anyway, they said, where we're going, we got to have a seawall, a big 20-footer, so make some ladders. So we did, and we got there. There was no seawall. So we unloaded our troops in Nagasaki, and I could see no damage done to the harbor, but everything was over the hill, I guess, where the bomb hit. So we sat around there for a couple of, I don't know how long, maybe a week. And we were working on the deck, and all at once I heard this noise, this whistling, screaming, hollering. And I thought, holy smokes, what's going on? And a British aircraft carrier was coming down a river that was going up into Japan. And they had just somehow released a bunch of American POWs up there. And when they came down and hit that harbor and seen all them ships, they went apey.
They were pretty happy to see them, weren't they? Peter, have you got a story for us, too?
No, I wasn't on that ship when they were in Nagasaki, but I was in... I just was on the ship when they transported troops back and forth. And we ended up in San Francisco. We went up a bay in San Francisco and decommissioned the ship. And I was it was the last time I was on that ship because I went back to Treasure Island and I was discharged.
Peter, how'd you go from building buildings and stuff, being a CB, to building lunch?
Well, that's... I come from a background of cooks. My father had a restaurant, and I worked in the restaurant when I was going to high school. So, and then when they find out when I was in the Navy, they put me in cooks and baker school, and I learned that the cook the Navy way.
Anyway. Well, I'll bet they were happy to have you.
Well, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
Very that much. Ship was so good a ship. They took it out again when the Korean War came, and it went all through the Korean War. And then the last I've heard about it, they sold it to Gillette. So you might be shaving with my ship.
One more question for both of you. How's the day going? Are you enjoying it?
Oh, fantastic. I can't tell you the reception we had at the airport, and then wherever place we went, all these strangers congratulating us. Fantastic.
I feel the same. It's just fantastic. I was supposed to go last year, but I got sick. But then they got me in this year, and I'm glad.
And I was supposed to go last year also, but I had a pacemaker put in. So my son called and canceled, and here I am to this today. I got my pacemaker, though.
I had bladder cancer.
But you're okay now?
I'm getting there, yeah.
All right, well, we're glad both of you are able to join us today.
Thank you.
Jerry, the Iwo Jima Memorial is a beautiful memorial. What was it, about 19 feet high? There's a limit on how big and how wide it can be. And it was fun to run into those two Navy guys that served on the same ship together and didn't even know.
Yes, it happens all the time. We've had many times where they get on our aircraft and everyone gets a biography. And many times that they are looking through there, they say, well, I know that guy. And I served with him. I'll leave you with this one, two of what Iwo Jima. There was a military, he was an infantry person on the island, and a guy who was flying over in a P-51 that developed engine trouble, and he landed there. And they got out of the aircraft, and he was taking ground fire, and see, he says, well, what do I do now? And he says, well, you're an infantry guy. Where are you from? He says, well, I'm from Richfield, Minnesota. He says, well, so am I. Wow. And was there for a couple of days, and they fixed his aircraft up, and he was able to leave. Those two gentlemen were on our flight in 2014. They hadn't seen each other in 70 years. This was February. Well, we were there in April of 2014, and they had seen each other in February of 1945 was the last time they saw each other.
And Jerry, the Iwo Jima Memorial, that's a special flag too, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's the only one in the United States that's allowed to be flown 24 hours a day.
That's right. There's a light on it all the time.
And that was a great stop. And from there, we went over to Arlington Cemetery, and we're going to get to that in a moment, but we have to take a short break. This is our July 4th Honor Flight Twin Cities special edition of Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this special July 4th Honor Flight Twin Cities edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been reliving our April flight to the nation's capital with our World War II and Korea veterans and their guardians, along with the honorary Command Sergeant Major Jerry Kaiser, who has led the flights 15 times so far, And Jerry, that was quite a day. When we finished the last segment, we were just loading up the luxury buses again, getting ready to leave the Iwo Jima Memorial so that we could get over to Arlington Cemetery for the changing of the guard and the lowering of the flag. And Arlington Cemetery is one of the most peaceful, one of the nicest places I think I've ever visited. And if you haven't been there, that might not make much sense. Who wants to go visit a cemetery? But what an incredible place.
Yes, sir. There are 420,000 plus graves there. And in April, we were there to see the changing of the guard at 5 o'clock and then see the lowering of the flag. And it's a very emotional time for me and all the veterans.
So we got back over to Arlington, drove the buses right up to the building that sits right next to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And you had some spots roped off for the World War II veterans in their wheelchairs so they could sit right up front. And it's a place where you don't make any noise and you don't take pictures, and it's a very reverent place, isn't it?
These World War II veterans were just quiet as mice. They were paying attention to the details and watching the men make their 21 steps and the changing of the guard. Perfection is paramount. Each one of these guards are 6'2", and their profile is that their waist is 34 inches.
They were in shape, and they're inspected before they go out, and they guard the Tomb of the Unknown 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, doesn't matter what the weather is.
That's right. Even during the blizzards of, it's not been unmanned at any time since we started doing that, I believe, in the 50s. I don't know. I can't remember the time when they started doing it.
And when we were out there, we learned that when the guard marches back and forth, he takes 21 steps, and he stops for 21 seconds. And then he turns, and he takes 21 steps again. And we found a poem about Arlington called 21 Steps that explains that pretty well, and we're going to play that poem right now. 21 Steps by Thomas Holmquist. Arlington, where our unknown soldier lies, the place to honor those who gave their lives. Those that died, the generations be free. May we remember them through eternity. This unknown soldier guarded day and night by the choice of a few with all their might to show mankind their respect and dignity to those who defended our lives and liberty. 21 steps, he takes 21 steps, eyes locked in honor for the soldier he guards, and 21 seconds before he turns to honor the soldiers who never return. 21 steps until the end of time, for our lost soldiers we cannot find. They gave their lives for you and me, the price paid to preserve our dignity. So let's take 21 steps, just 21 steps, lock our eyes in honor for our soldiers that died, and think for 21 seconds about the sacrifice to preserve our freedom and our children's lives. And Jerry, I think that poem explained that pretty well. It's all about those who came back and those who couldn't come back. And the Tomb of the Unknown, of course, is we don't know who it is in there, but we're going to guard him, and those guards are going to guard him with their lives.
Right. There is an unknown soldier for World War I, World War II, and Korea, but there is not one for Vietnam. That was... He was reinterned. They finally found out who that was, and that there is no unknown for Vietnam.
For Vietnam. And Jerry, while we were at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, we had an opportunity to interview one more veteran, and let's listen to that now.
The last official stop of the day from Arlington Cemetery on the Honor Flight Twin Cities, and we just watched the changing of the guard and the taking down of the flag, and we're talking to Robert Earle, a World War II veteran. Robert, how was that ceremony?
It was wonderful. I'm proud of you, American.
Can you tell us where you served and what you did in World War II?
Well, I was on board of USS Tuscaloosa and went out to Noumea, New Caledonia, and I spent the time out there, and we decommissioned their ship up in Philadelphia, and then I came home.
So how's the day been?
It's been wonderful. I really enjoyed it and learned a lot.
Did you enjoy the World War II Memorial?
Very good. All of them. Very good, yeah.
In Arlington.
Iwo Jima, I remember seeing pictures of it. Now to see it in person is pretty good. Wonderful.
Arlington Cemetery is really something, isn't it?
It sure is, yeah.
Looking out here over the fields with all the stones.
Yeah. Must be thousands of them there.
Big number, sir, I think. Big number.
Right.
Well, that was quite a ceremony. The Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, wasn't it?
Oh, was it ever, yeah. Yeah. Wonder if that's have that job for their. It would be a tough job to have, maybe.
You think we could stand tall enough to do that for about a half hour?
I don't think I could. No. No.
I'm sure I could.
No.
So you're glad you came on the trip?
Very much so, yes. Mm-hmm. Sure. I remember it for many years, yeah.
Now, did your guardian take good care of you?
Oh, he sure did. He's watching me all the time.
Yeah. We know that guy?
Oh, yeah.
We're teasing him. His guardian was my son, Chris Lyons. He did an okay job, right?
Very good. Very good job. Yep.
All right, sir. Thanks for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
Jerry, that was the last stop of the day, and I had the particular pleasure of, as you know, I had a little influence with you, and I was able to get my son in as a guardian and pay for him to go. And he told me when we got home that night that it was a wonderful day. And thank you to you and the general for, he was a Navy veteran, and you put him with a World War II Navy veteran, and they bonded all day long. They were talking about World War II. They were talking about all kinds of things, and he had a great trip. Thank you.
This honor flight, there's no downsides to it. The only guess downsides to it is that some of my heroes have passed on, but they have been able to see exactly what they needed to see, and they can live their last years in peace, knowing that they've done the best that they could do and to honor those who served with them in World War II.
Now, there were a couple other things that happened before we got home and it was all over that I thought were extraordinary, and one was we left Arlington and we went to dinner, because you take us to dinner at a buffet steakhouse, and the three buses rolled up, and it takes a while for everybody to get in. When I walked in the door, this was a huge place. There was room for us on one side, and the other side was full. There were a whole lot of young people in there, and when I walked in the door, they were cheering, and they were screaming, and they were saying congratulations, and the World War II guys, they were shaking their hands. It was incredible.
Yes, it was another busload, three busloads of young people who were there. I can't remember what the event was, but the manager of the place knew we were coming, and he told them that we were come in, and actually we kept some of the local folks out because it was full. It was so there was 350 of us in there, and it was pretty loud, and they kept cheering for, I must have been 5 minutes, you know, just
it was extraordinary.
It was a wonderful day. Yep.
So we had dinner and went back out to the airport, got on the flight. By the way, getting on and off these flights is like it used to be at the airport 30 years ago. You just walk in, show them your badge, check you off the list, and away you go.
Well, these men are, and women are special. They're just like the President of the United States. They walk on. They're vetted beforehand. We have not had one World War II veteran that's on a do not fly list, believe it or not. So it's we've been just blessed with having that, being able to get on. They don't have to take off their shoes or nothing, and just walk and show their tag that I give them, that they get on the bus, and that's it.
So we got back to the airport, loaded up the plane, took off. I think the flight attendants wanted to put everybody to sleep, but it wasn't working. I didn't see any veterans sleeping on the way back. They were pretty revved up.
No, we had some songs too, you know, all the different service songs. That was fun.
And then we got back to the Humphrey Terminal here in the Twin Cities, and it wasn't over yet. We got off the plane early, my producer and I, so that we could get some audio and some other things, and you got everybody off the plane, lined them all up, came over up to the security door, and we've got a guest here to help you tell part of this story, Tim Leonhardt from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard. Tim, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Jerry, what happens when they come through that security door?
Well, we have about 400 people there. We have the military folks from the University of Minnesota ROTC department. So you had the Air Force, Navy, Army, cadets, and midshipmen, and some Marines there also. And we had U.S. Air Force National Guard, Brigadier General Sandy Best, and Brigadier General
Hamler.
He was there also, and shaking hands. And I wanted the General Best to shake all the ladies' hands, the five ladies. They were so proud that they had never met a woman general before, and she's the first one in the state of Minnesota, and she was thrilled to do that, too.
Yeah, Tim, I asked them, and I think there were 32 Patriot Guard riders there. This was 10:30 at night on a Saturday night. You've been out there when they've returned, haven't you?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's an honor to be there, and it's an exciting thing to see. You know, you get to welcome home these gentlemen and the ladies that some of them never been welcomed home before. You know, and you see them coming through the flag line, and their chests are out, and they're proud.
And it makes you feel pretty good to be part of it, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, it does.
And, Jerry, the World War II guys, you know, every other one of them, they were dropping a tear here and there, and a bunch of them saw some family members, a lot of family members they didn't expect.
Oh, yes. I get them off the aircraft, and they're kind of, well, I got to get home, got to get in my car. And I said, well, hold it. We got Sergeant Major's got one more thing for you. And, oh, what is that? And I says, well, just hold on. Well, they come through that portal there, and they just get all puffed up and go walking down the line there. And it's wonderful for them to be able to do that. And also the Armed Forces Center, every time, 15 times, they're there in the morning at 4 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock to give them coffee and cake and
water and gum and all kinds of
stuff. And then they're there, that same group of people is there at 10 o'clock that night, and they're there to greet us, and they are a great asset out there. The Armed Forces Center does a great job. We just really appreciate them. And then we finish it up. Jana and my wife and I are the last two to go. And
that terminal was packed full of people.
That's right. So we get home 12 o'clock. So I'm up at 3 and back home at 12.
Jerry, one of the interesting things I saw on the flight out from Minneapolis to D.C. was mail call. You surprised the veterans.
Yes, that is a wonderful thing for them to have. One of the veterans gets about 15 to 20 letters from their family members and others. During World War II, there was a way for them to get the mail by getting, you write a letter and it went into a special portion of the United States mail service that separated between the Pacific and the Atlantic. They would put 1,500 plus letters on some microfiche. It would go flown out to different parts of the world, and then they would reposition that stuff onto paper and then get it to the veterans. And that's how they communicated. There was no phone calls. There was none of that. And these men and women, each one of them gets that. We have their family members and school kids and all sorts of different organizations give them letters. The senators and representatives of the state of Minnesota also give them letters. Senator Klobuchar does. I know representatives do that too, but each time they do that. And it's very emotional after they have their little breakfast in the morning. Then I call mail call, and then the tears start to flow because some of these men and women haven't gotten anything like this in 70 years, and they start remembering that some men never got those letters, and that means a lot to them now. And so everyone has got tears in their eyes and pretty emotional. So mail call is a pretty neat thing.
And they spent about an hour after breakfast reading through all of those letters and all of those things, and it was a great way to put them in a mood for the opening sequences when we got to Reagan National in Washington, D.C.
Yes, sir, it was. It was great.
Jerry, it was an honor to join you on that flight and capture some of those stories, and we thought it'd be perfect to tell the story of our World War II and Korea veterans on the July 4th weekend. Now, before we let you go, you've got another one of these coming up this fall.
Absolutely, yeah. October 29th is a Saturday, and we are recruiting for that. I need more World War II veterans. They're out there, and I'm looking for all these World War II veterans and everyone who goes on, the Guardians included. They are our ambassadors, and when you're an ambassador, your responsibility is to seek out and find other veterans who want to go. If you want to become a Guardian and be a Guardian in this, you find a World War II veteran and get him to go on the thing, you're going on the trip. So that's an incentive for you to do that. We have 300 men and women on the waiting list to be Guardians. I don't have 300 World War II Guardians.
Tim, when I think of all the writers that were there greeting these World War II guys coming back, and I came through that line too, all I can think about is your mission.
Oh, yes.
Honor.
Honor, dignity, and respect.
Dignity and respect, yeah, absolutely.
Those men and women deserve it. I mean, they really do. They pretty much set, you know, the pace of what we expect our military to do to be today.
Tim, make sure you thank all the Minnesota Patriot Guard writers for all of the missions they're going on and for helping Jerry with his Honor Flight Twin Cities. Jerry, before we go, I have to read a little announcement here. Jerry Kaiser, the guy I'm talking to now, has been selected as a recipient of the 2016 Ellis Island Medal of Honor. He's one of 100 men and women who were chosen out of 1,200 nominees whose ancestors immigrated to America while proving themselves valuable U.S. citizens. They employ the spirit of America in their celebration of patriotism, tolerance, brotherhood, and diversity. In order to receive the Medal of Honor, they're also required to be able to read, write, spell their own name, know what state they're from, and provide their own travel expenses. Were you able to do that, Jerry? Yes, you were. I'm teasing. Actually, Jerry made a commitment on September 11, 2001, to lead an organization that would never let the military or veterans be treated like the Korea and Vietnam veterans were treated. He's done so by representing the Minnesota Vietnam Veteran Charity, Honor Flight Twin Cities, CAF, T-6 Thunder Flyers, and the Great Veterans and Military Friends of Minnesota. Jerry, congratulations on a well-deserved and receiving the 2016 Ellis Island Medal of Honor.
Well, thank you very much. It is an honor for that. I wouldn't be able to do that, though, without all the help that I get from, for number one, my beloved wife, Jana. She's a support of this whole thing. Started way back when, and 2001, and all the other volunteers and guardians that do the things that need to be done to get this thing done. And then Tom, you and others, and putting us on at the show. It's wonderful. We'll continue to do this for the Korean veterans. 2020, I think that's down the pike. I don't know what's gonna happen, but that's what we're gonna do. Now, I'm always asked, well, what about the Vietnam veterans? And I said, you know what? I'm going to take care. I am a war baby from World War II, born during the war. My passion is doing World War II in Korea, and we'll help whoever wants to set it up for the Vietnam veterans. The children of Vietnam veterans should be able to put this together.
Jerry, you know I like to tease you a little bit, and we're always razzing each other a little bit, but well done. Take it one flight at a time, and let's see how far this goes, and keep up the good work.
Well, thank you very much.
Tim, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for letting me be here.
We're just about out of time. Thanks. Thank you for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. And I'd like to thank Jerry Kaiser and our World War II and Korean veterans and all of the guardians who volunteered for the 15th Honor Flight Twin Cities for joining us. On this July 4th weekend, please take a moment to remember all those who have sacrificed so much for this great country, so that we can spend time with our family and friends celebrating the nation's birthday. And let us remember our service members all over the world protecting our way of life so that we can savor the freedoms we enjoy so much here in America. Please join us next week on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week and every week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.